Typically, Seventh-day Adventists do not believe in an eternally burning hell, yet they do believe in hell. What's the difference? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, host and study guide author for our discussions this quarter on Life Everlasting, on Death, Dying, and the Future Hope. I'm Professor Emeritus of Biblical Studies from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn, Dave Thomas. They are also from the Walla Walla University School of Theology. So let's go back to that open question. What kind of hell do Adventists believe in? Because we do believe in hell, don't we?
Hell is a lake of fire that results in the final destruction of all things evil and its residues.
Well, that's fairly tidy. Give us some Old Testament insights. What's hell, Jody?
From the Old Testament?
Yeah.
The underworld?
The underworld? The Hebrew word is Sheol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because as you mentioned many weeks ago, that the cosmology of the date was three tiers. There was the heavens and the earth and the underworld. And people didn't know a lot about the underworld. It was just a murky place where when you died, that's where you went.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of mythology built up about the underworld, right? Especially I know more about the Roman one than I do about the Hebrew one. But, I mean, you have all these stories of the river Styx to be crossed over, and some people could cross back and some could not. But they didn't see that as an annihilation. They just thought that that's where you went to live, in this murky underworld, and it was not a good place to go. And I think in the Middle Ages it got connected with eternal fires, didn't it? Or somewhere there. And so some people theorize that the Valley of Gehenna, which was the city dump, which ended up having this smoky fires that burnt all the time, and they would dispose of indigent bodies down there, that all played into the development of the doctrine, traditional doctrine of hell.
Well, that begins to move towards the hot hell.
Yeah.
But Sheol is the cold hell. Everybody goes down there.
Yep.
And what do you mean by cold hell? It just is regular temperature. It's like a cave, an underground cave.
Yeah. It's just like, yeah, you just go back to dust, like Ecclesiastes says, reversing the...
But you go to dust in Sheol.
Yeah, I mean, Sheol is sometimes used as synonymous with the grave.
Yeah, it is, mm-hmm. with the grave, yeah.
Yeah, so there's not a really developed idea of afterlife much at all in the Hebrew Bible.
No. That comes later. In Roman mythology, there's a lot of stories about what happens when you're in the underworld. There are even gods in the underworld.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much in Hebrew ideas.
There's the idea in the Hebrew Bible of wanting to be respectful and care for your quote-unquote deceased ancestors. You know, there are hints of, for instance, putting some sort of provisions next to the grave or having a feast to commemorate, like, the anniversary of a death.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of a very developed, idea of afterlife is...
So the idea of spirits visiting you doesn't really exist in the Old Testament, right? Like when you die, your spirit goes on, and then it may come and visit you. You may go and visit your relatives. I don't see that in the Old Testament.
You see, well, the key words there in the Old Testament are ruach, and the key word is ruach, and it can be spirit,
breath,
or wind.
Yeah.
And nowhere does it have any kind of concept of disembodied life continuing on.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that it's interesting that for a long time, if you quit breathing, you are declared dead. And still today, in some cultures, if you quit breathing, they figure you have died.
Yeah.
They don't try and revive you.
Mm-hmm. That would be tragic for certain situations.
Well, to us, it would be tragic because, I mean, especially people who get stuck in very cold water, they can be revived after like half an hour sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you didn't try and revive somebody who stopped breathing now, you could be in trouble in this culture.
Mm-hmm.
But in many places, if you quit breathing, it's over.
Mm-hmm. Alden, I don't know if I'm going to derail you with this comment, but you know your opening question about what's the difference You know, what's the difference between when we discuss hell? Well, what do you think about hell? What do you think about hell? It strikes me that I guess I'm less interested in defining hell than I am in thinking about what are the relational implications of being sure that one that like I'll just say I'll take it for myself as an example. What are the relational implications of being sure that I know who is quote unquote going to hell and who is not? Because that to me is the theme that I see coming up in all kinds of stories that I've run across, where as soon as you decide, oh well, such and so is going to hell for whatever reason, right? Not in the part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
It makes interaction human to human really awkward.
But it's also interesting, as one who's done many funerals, that people are oftentimes speculating whether this person who died is going to hell or to heaven. And I, for many years, have publicly stated that that's not our business.
But I've sensed that once people are dead, we're usually quite generous. We talk about...
In this age, we don't send people to hell, but in past ages, they very quickly send people to hell.
But even, let's just take this age, you know, it's just interesting to me how easy it can be when someone's alive to be very interested in saying, for this and this and this reason, they're not in, right? Mm-hmm. They're out. But then once they die, we say polite things and we talk about whatever we talk about.
You never look better than at the eulogy of your funeral, Judy.
Is that supposed to be comforting?
No, no, but it's a funny thing, you know. I mean, I've actually been to funerals where they lauded a scoundrel to the point where I didn't recognize who they were talking about. You know, I mean, it's nobody wants to speak badly of those who have died.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is another issue too, Alden, that you haven't mentioned, and that is the theological problem of an ever-burning hell where God keeps sinners alive to torture them or to burn them. You know, that's very incompatible with the idea of a God who is love. And it's interesting to me as a theologian that the traditional doctrine of hell has fallen on hard times, that some notable scholars, even John Stott, was saying that, this idea is one that we need to detune. And as people focus more and more on a God of love, the doctrine of hell becomes less and less tenable. You find in fundamentalist circles where the doctrine of hell is very powerful and very useful in scaring people. And one of the things I've loved about being an Adventist is that my religion, the urgency of my religion does not come from the fear of escaping hell or the need to escape hell, but from the hope of seeing Christ come. And I think those two differences are very different. When I hear somebody preach people about, you better not, you're going to go to hell if you do this and that, or you need to accept Christ so you don't go to hell, that's not the kind of motivation that I think is very noble.
Part of the challenge...
Or happy.
part of the challenge that we face is that if we are... I mean, it just seems impolite if you go to a funeral and say, this guy was a scoundrel. So we look long and hard to find some positive things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's understandable.
And yet, Alden, I've done some funerals where I acknowledged publicly that this person was a scoundrel, and everybody was grateful that I told the truth. I didn't do it in a disparaging way, mm-hmm. but you know that, or that people made a mistake. I mean, I remember doing a funeral for a young man who committed suicide at age 32. And I said to the people, you know, we have to face the fact that he blew it. He became discouraged for some reason and did something drastic, which we all wish he hadn't done. And people were very thankful that I hadn't glossed that over, because everybody knew it, but it would be unrealistic, see. So it's not disparaging the person, but acknowledging that this was part of their life.
Well, if we believe in grace, we don't have to make a decision.
No. But I've always refused to speculate on eternal destiny. I tell people publicly this is not something that's in the realm of human understanding.
Mm-hmm. There's one passage, and we talk about the nature of hell, and I think this illustrates the Old Testament one. Isaiah 14. This is the famous Lucifer passage, but it goes on there. I'll begin reading with Isaiah 14, verse 15. Where it says, you are brought down to Sheol, to the depths of the pit. Those who see you will stare at you and ponder over you. Is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms, who made the world like a desert and overthrew its cities, who would not let his prisoners go home? All the kings of the nations lie in glory, each in his own tomb. But you are cast out away from your grave like loathsome cannons, clothed with the dead, those pierced by the sword who go down to the stones a bit like a corpse. I'll back up here to verse 9. Well, let me go back to verse 8, which talks about the death of the king of Babylon. The cypresses exult over you, the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since you were laid low, no one comes to cut us down. Sheol beneath is stirred up to meet you when you come. It rouses the shades to greet you. All who were leaders of the earth, it raises from the thrones. All who were kings of the nations, all who will speak and say to you, you too have become as weak as we. You have become like us. Your pomp is brought down to Sheol and the sound of your harps. Maggots are the bed beneath you, and worms are your covering.
This is a picture of dishonorable burial, or lack of honorable burial.
Yes, that's right. See. Now, at the other end, I think it's important to look at the New Testament lake of fire. If you look at the lake of fire, the hot hell is illustrated there. Notice what goes into the lake of fire. You can read chapter 20. It will give you the full story, but I'll just list them here. What goes into it? The devil, the beast, the false prophet, death, Hades, anyone whose name is not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. If you put that on video, it really looks very interesting. Okay, here's death, boom. Here's hell, boom, goes into the lake of fire. And I think we need to recognize that that is a very important picture to fill out our understanding of hell. To sum up, this week we have explored the biblical understanding of hell. It is a thoroughly biblical idea, even though the idea of an eternally burning hell is not. The fires of hell burn as long as there is something to burn. In the end, even death and hell are cast into the lake of fire. In the new earth, there is no place for hell. My thanks to Dave Thomas and Jody Washburn, my conversation partners, to Kristen Byerly, program engineer, to each of you for listening in. With a good word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.